And greetings. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. We love to hear from you. About 300,000 of you are downloading these podcasts. We're so happy to hear from you. You can go to naturalnurse.com and send us an email, or you can go to facebook.com. And just look for Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And I'd like to tell you, we have been doing online classes now for, a lot of years. I think almost 10 years, in fact, before they had all these modern technologies. And of course, we were also doing on ground. Now, if you'd like to join our newsletter, just go to naturalnurse.com. On the homepage, scroll down to the left-hand corner, and just put your email in, nothing else. We don't ask for anything else. You can do yourself anytime you don't want to get it anymore. And if you would just like to go on yourself to look at some of our upcoming classes, you just go to naturalnurse.com calendar. And we have so many classes. For instance, coming right up, we have one called Herbs for You and Your Family, Safe and Effective Use. That is totally free. It is an online meeting. It's hosted by the Brentwood Library in Brentwood, Long Island. But of course, anything online has no meaning in terms of time and place. Or perhaps rather than no meaning, we now have a new understanding and a much broader interactivity between not being linked to time and space. It's very interesting. We also have part of our Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course coming up. That is class 3, and that has 3 CE credits for nurses, nurse practitioners, registered dietitians, licensed massage therapists, and many other health providers. You can, but it is open to anyone. You don't have to need three CEUs. It is also part of a larger class, which is the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course. And that goes on beyond that class, and you can certainly sign up for that. And then you get a certificate. You get your CE credits if you're a health professional, and you get a certificate whether you're a health professional or anyone taking the class and completing all the assignments. Then we have a very interesting class coming up called Hildegard of Bingen, Mystic, Psychic, Visionary. She is a master herbalist, weaving the tapestry of healing from the cosmic elements. Hildegard is an amazing personality. Whether you know about her or you don't, and you're interested in any of those things, such as herbal medicine, such as spiritual healing, such as energetic healing, something like Reiki or therapeutic touch from the nursing side, such as using gemstone therapy. Hildegard used all of it and also wrote down her therapeutics. And this was in the year 1000 something. So we're talking about, people tell me I'm a pioneer. I'm not a pioneer, but Hildegard is. And certainly I am Hildegard's student over all of these many, many centuries. Really an amazing person. And you'll get to see some of her. Oh, that also has 3 CE credits, by the way, for nurses, midwives, massage therapists, acupuncturists, nutritionists, nurse practitioners, etc. And it's all about her healing modalities. And then I delve into a lot of the scientific verification that supports her ancient medicine. So you can look online, join us for anything. We have lots and lots of things. Herb walks, God willing, coming up in June. We'll see. We have one on fertility support, natural foods and botanicals for men and women. And that also has credits with it. So just go to naturalnurse.com calendar and you can find out about all those classes. And we'd be very happy to have you along on any of those things. And today we are very happy to have as our guest Christine Brown, who is a registered herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild. And many of you, of course, have heard many of people who are registered herbalists with the American Herbalist Guild right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Christine is with the has a passion for teaching children. That's her real focus about herbs, and is a creator, writer, and illustrator of a beautiful online magazine called Herbal Roots Zine. And it's something you can pull up while we're even talking if you like. It's Herbal Roots with an S, Zine, Z-I-N-E, like, you know, sort of like a magazine, .com. And there she has all kinds of things that you can teach kids about herbs, so appropriate when we're all stuck homeschooling at this time, about herbs, one herb. And she also has a all kinds of games, stories, songs, puzzles, mazes, crafts, recipes, and coloring pages. Christine helps parents who want to teach their children about the medicinal use of herbs by giving them the tools they need to accomplish that goal. And Christine also offers courses that parents can take to help focus on a group of herbs. Christine is also the author of Herbalism at Home, 125 recipes for everyday health. And the best place to find Christine is at herbalrootszine.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Christine.
Hi, Ellen. Thanks for having me on. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, we can hear you loud and clear. And I'm looking at Herbal Roots Zine right now, and you have an interesting thing right here about chocolate. So I'm going to, before we go back in time and look at your history, what is this about? Did you know that eating chocolate can inhibit cavities from forming?
That's from one of my issues of Herbal Roots Zine that people can get for free when they sign up for my free newsletter. And that issue just talks all about the medicinal uses of cacao and how it can be used for a variety of health issues, including, like you mentioned, stopping cavities. We're not talking eating milk chocolate by the bar, but if you're using the actual cacao in its natural form, it can help to inhibit cavities.
So that's really interesting. You know, it would certainly catch a child's attention to hear anything good about that, or the moms or dads, for that matter. I happen to feel like I'm pretty lucky that I don't even like chocolate, but you're right. It's so often served in a way where it's loaded with other kinds of emulsifiers and thickeners and thinners and artificial flavors and tons of sugar, but that is very far away from the natural plant essence of it.
Yes.
Now, let's go back in time. Christine, give us a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, and what led you on the herbal path.
Okay, so I was raised on a farm. We had about 14 acres, so it was a really small farm, but it was out in the country. We had horses and lots of woods to explore. And so my childhood days were spent outdoors, just playing in the woods, reading books, riding my horses, things like that. And I was always drawn to the plants. I would bring my friends out there and make them wild onion soup and make them drink it. And I'm surprised they were still my friends after that, but they stuck with me. And my grandmother was a huge gardener too, and my parents. And my grandma always talked about eating wild plants and things like that. But I didn't really get into the medicinal uses of herbs until I had my first child. And at that point in my life, I wanted to do things more naturally and more healthy. So that's when I started learning about the medicinal uses of the plants. Up until that point, I really didn't know that that existed. I wasn't raised that way, but it was just something I sort of naturally fell into as I became a parent myself.
So you were first drawn to, well, that's very interesting. Not everybody grew up on a farm. So that sort of led you into a natural lifestyle to begin with. And then you recommitted to it when you became a mother.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. I preferred to be outside when I was a kid versus indoors. And then I moved to Los Angeles for a few years, and I was not outside much because it was, you know, concrete jungle. And so when I moved back to the Midwest, that's when I sort of started getting back into nature. And then, yeah, it just kind of fell into place, learning about the plants and how to use them fully.
Now, what made you really focus on children's herbal medicine? Because I think that's a very interesting and unique niche.
Well, it started, so I have four children, and when I had my first two children with one marriage, and then with my second partnership, we had two more children, and I decided at that point I wanted to start homeschooling my children. And so when my third child was about 4 years old, I started looking into different curriculums, and I was drawn to the Waldorf and Charlotte Mason, things that were more nature-led. But one thing I found that was lacking was teaching children about the medicinal uses of herbs. And there was a few books out there, like Leslie Tierra's book, and a couple others, like The Herbalist of Yarrow. But there wasn't really any teaching guides on how to bring it down to a kid's level. And so at the time, this is before like Facebook was really prevalent, and most people were blogging. And I had a small homeschooling blog community, and I had seen some other people putting together some homeschool curriculum resources of what they were doing, not herbally based, but just their curriculum in general. And that kind of gave me an idea of, why don't I do it? You know, I remember as a kid having Highlights magazine and Ranger Rick magazine and loving those. It'd be really cool to have a magazine about herbs for kids. So I started just putting together one issue every month. And each issue just focused on one particular herb, and I would have like an all about section that would teach about the medicinal uses, but then I would make it fun for kids. So I would have like a story about the herb, a song about it, and different games, puzzles. I'd have a coloring page and a maze, crossword puzzles, just anything I could do to make it fun, any craft activities. And so that's pretty much how it was born, that I started teaching kids about herbs, was through my own children.
So I want to tell you, it's interesting because you did this as a personal project. Who did all the artwork on your beautiful site, Herbal Root Sign?
That was me. Growing up, I loved to draw. And when I was a kid, having horses were my passion. So I drew horses all the time. And then when I became an adult and started writing this magazine, the plants were my passion. So I started drawing them myself and adding them into the issues to just make it colorful and fun.
Well, you're a very good artist.
Thank you.
And I think you really, being an herbalist and tuned into the land, you really capture, besides, let's say, the color and the shape, you're really capturing the energy of the plant as well.
Yeah, I've kind of developed this thing over the years through learning through other herbalists. Isla Burgess is one of my big mentors, Lisa Ganora. Learning different experiential activities with the plants, just really learning to get intimate with them and look at them closely and notice all their details. And then I brought drawing into that element, and I found that by doing like blind contour drawings and modified contour drawings, that I could actually see the details of the plant and start to learn to ID them better. So I started incorporating that into my studies as well, and also into my teachings.
Well, since you mentioned Lisa, she's been a guest on the show too many years ago, then I know that you've really actually gone beyond just gardening type and folkloric herbal medicine into plant chemistry, because that is really her forte.
Yeah, I do dabble a little bit with that. My brain doesn't wrap around chemistry all that great, so I don't understand probably more than 10% of what she talks about sometimes, because she really is scientific, and I really respect that. But I look more into her experiential studies that she's done, like her coyote medicine, where she teaches about actually smelling the plant in the way that a canine would do it. So I kind of go off into that realm with her studies.
That's excellent. Well, you know, it's very fortuitous, Christine, this track that you're on, because I hope you even know how marketable your entire program is right this minute in time. Do you know every single school district could be incorporating your entire class as part of their now everyone being homeschooled outreach?
Yeah, I think that would be pretty awesome. One of the things I really love is when schools incorporate gardening into their lessons and they let the kids go out and outside and actually dig in the earth and plant things. And if they would incorporate an herbal curriculum into that, that would be amazing, because there's so much the children could learn, not just about the botany and the science, but there's just so many other levels of learning with the plants that could just take it a long way.
Yes, but also you decided to homeschool years ago, and now everybody's doing it. It's right. The groove, whether you like it or not. It's pretty phenomenal. What made you make that decision to homeschool?
I was a little frustrated with my older two children, watching them struggle with things in school, being forced to read so early before they were ready to. A lot of studies are showing that children actually do better if you delay their reading. And my younger two children didn't start reading until they were probably 10 and 11. And now their reading capacity is just way beyond what my older children were, you know, when they started reading younger. So it's interesting that watching the schools, and I understand they have so many kids to teach that they can't customize their curriculum to every child. And so that's what appealed to me, was I could look at my children's learning behaviors and the methods that they learn from best, and I could cater to them. And that's why with my magazine, I created all sorts of activities. I don't expect children to sit down with it and go cover to cover. Some will, because they're that type of achiever, but other children are going to be more drawn to making the crafts or doing the more science experiment type things, making the recipes, whereas other children might enjoy doing the word searches and the word scrambles and things like that. So I try to create all the different learning experiences in the magazine so that the children could be drawn to what works for them and learn from it, regardless of where they pick it up at.
Well, it looks like it's, you know, both a lot of fun. Now, how do you structure the day? Because a lot of parents that I have spoken to who are new to homeschooling are finding that a tremendous challenge. I mean, basically, you have to be involved most of the day with your kids.
Yeah, and again, it depends on the individual children. My youngest has ADHD, and I definitely have to be beside him, even though he's 13 now. I have to be with him every minute of his learning day to keep him on task, because he strays very easily. For him, I find it's easier before I give him something that he really needs to focus on, is getting him outdoors and getting him into some physical activity. And that really helps to quiet his brain so that when we come in and work, he's ready to sit down and focus. And so for him, it's better to break it up in chunks. So I find we prioritize by the harder subjects first, but we'll start it off with some physical activity to get him just kind of worn out, so to speak, so that his brain can just sit and focus. And then we'll work on a subject or two. And I try not to do it more than 30, 45 minutes at a time, just so that we can make sure that he gets those breaks he needs and to get up and move around. And with other children, it might be easier to just dive into a more art style project first to ease them into the day. Some children enjoy doing some songs, so maybe we'll do like some songs or poems and just some natural work to get them ready for the day. So again, it's going to depend on your child, but I like to just kind of see where they are and what works best for them.
So if your youngest is 13, how old is your oldest?
25.
So your 25-year-old went through his or her entire education at home, and then did they go on to college at all?
No, my older two children were never homeschooled. Their father would not let me homeschool them. So it was only my younger two that I homeschooled. And they were homeschooled from the time they were born, basically, up until this past year when they decided they wanted to try school. So my daughter went into ninth grade and my son went into eighth grade. And so they were at school, what, 3/4 of the year, and then they came back home.
Oh, my God, that is totally ironic.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in, because I thought about that when my children were little. My children are 45 and 40. Because I actually did not want to go along with some of the things that are involved in schooling, such as vaccinations, which at that time were not even mandatory, if anybody remembers back 45 years ago when my kids were little. But I did not want them to have that. So I tried homeschooling for a while, but I found that my son in particular actually really missed the socialization.
Yeah, that's kind of a big argument against homeschooling is how are your children going to socialize? And anyone who knows my 15-year-old sees that that's a farce because she is the biggest socializer I know. And she has friends from all over the place and of all ages. And that's the great thing about homeschooling is when you're in a school setting, you're put in a group setting with people all your own age, and you don't learn how to interact with people who are younger and people who are older. But when you're homeschooled, if we get together with a homeschool group, there's kids of all ages in there, and the adults as well that are bringing them to these events. And so children learn to interact with all different age groups. And my daughter also is in ballet, and she was dancing 2 days a week, about 4 hours a week, up till eight hours a week, depending on the season. And so she had a group of friends in there that were anywhere from a couple years younger than her up until 22, 23-year-olds. And she's great friends with all of them. And, you know, before we were put at stay at home, she would go out and hang out with them and just sit and talk. They'd go have coffee or whatever. And she feels comfortable with someone. It doesn't matter what their age is. And so I find that refreshing about homeschooling is that there's so many social opportunities with our extracurricular activities, our homeschool groups. If you're religious, you know, you're active in your church. There's just so many different community events that your children can get socialized that it's not really an issue with homeschooling.
Well, so you didn't find that to be a challenge at all?
No, not at all. And I also, for a while, I made handmade soap, and I would go around to different conferences and festivals and things and bring my children with me because since they were with me all the time, they just went wherever I went. And they would socialize with anybody, the different vendors, the customers. So, I mean, they took every opportunity to socialize, so they were not lacking.
Well, we're going to take a little break right here, Christine, so people can hear our natural medicine chest, which is kind of like the herbal root sign, only it's an audio magazine that Dr. Zamperin and myself actually have here on our show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we're going to go deeply into some of the fantastic content and how people can get in touch with you and use the Herbal Root Zine program as part of their homeschooling with their own children, who they are, many of them, home with right now. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-size tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You're here with your host, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And please get in touch at naturalnurse.com. You can sign up for our newsletter just by going down to the left-hand part of the page, the front page at naturalnurse.com. Just put in your email and nothing else. We offer many things such as personal consults about what natural remedies you can use for yourself and your family, classes in all different aspects of content of herbal and natural medicine, the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course, and also we work with the American Herbalist Guild as helping as a mentor with someone who would like to become a registered herbalist. And with that, we're coming back to our guest, Christine Brown, who is a registered herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild, and she is the author of Herbal Roots Zine. And there's no better time to look that up. Just remember the S on the end of roots. It's Herbal Roots with an S and then Z-I-N-E and .com. A beautiful, beautiful site. And if you're home with your children looking for a really wonderful thing to do, or even if you're an adult and you know, you're stuck at home more like everyone sort of is, there's so much to do here. I mean, beautiful, beautifully illustrated and accessible. I guess you would call this an online magazine. Also, welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Christine.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the American Herbalist Guild and why you chose to become a registered herbalist.
Well, in addition to homeschooling my kids and writing the monthly magazine, I also taught classes to adults about using herbal medicine, and I was seeing clients out of my home, and I just wanted to get the word out about herbalism and show people that it is a profession, because a lot of people didn't really take me seriously because I didn't have a degree. You know, I wasn't a doctor or a chiropractor or any other health practitioner. So through my studies and through my clinical practice with my clients, I decided to go ahead and just join as a professional member, or apply as a professional member or registered herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild, just to kind of give them that reassurance that I had been vetted by other people in my industry who saw that I did have potential and that I was a clinical herbalist and could be a professional as well. So I found that for my community, it was a really great way to give them that guarantee that I had studied a lot and I knew what I was doing, so that they would have that trust and confidence in me.
And I think that's a perfect description, because becoming a registered herbalist, I actually support, is the best certification, to where I feel very confident if someone wants to visit with an herbalist somewhere else in the country near them. If I see there's a registered herbalist there, whether I know them personally or not, just like you would recommend someone to another health professional, I feel very confident that they are highly trained and they are a competent herbalist. And that is so important, because there's many different herbal courses around where people call themselves a master herbalist after they take it. And when I look into the curriculum, it's like a weekend class, and then they're called a master herbalist, or they're called a certified herbalist. None of that has any meaning. But when we look at RH, registered herbalist, we know what that means in terms of the depth of study that someone must have in order to get that moniker of a registered herbalist. And in addition, I know that many insurance companies who you can go see a provider that's not covered, that the insurance company will want to know that that person is qualified. So if someone goes to see an herbalist and wants to get back their money from their health savings account, most of the insurance companies will recognize, if someone is an RH, that they are a qualified herbalist. So there's all kinds of reasons to become a qualified herbalist. And I would say, Christine, that you, to me, are really the poster child. In fact, I'll share with the audience, we actually use your curriculum outline that you put together for yourself in order to get a registered herbalist degree. But like you said, you're not necessarily a nurse or a doctor, but you don't have to be, because just because you are a nurse or a doctor does not mean you know anything about herbal medicine. So you put together a really unique independent study outline, which we actually use, I don't know that we're sharing your name, but as an example for people to follow, of how really in-depth your study is, which anyone can see by looking at herbalrootsign.com.
Yeah, I kind of piecemealed my education together for herbalism, and basically I homeschooled myself, because living here in the Midwest, there aren't any schools or any teachers that offer in-depth study on location. And because I was raising a family and I had my roots here in the Midwest, I wasn't able to just pick up and move somewhere where they did have a classroom to study in. So I took most of my classes. I did some online courses. I started out with Rosemary Gladstar's course, which is a great beginner's course. And from there, I just kind of added on. I looked at the American Herbalist Guild's requirements to become a registered herbalist, what they felt was a good education. And so I took that and I basically just filled in the blanks. So I would go to conferences seeking out specific herbalists that I wanted to learn from and topics I wanted to learn about. And I would go to them and study with them. And then if they had anything online that I could do as well. I also used a lot of the American Herbalist Guild resources because they offer a lot of webinars and audio recordings from previous symposiums that I could go on to the website and listen to as a member. And so I just began using that along with some books and then studying with other people when I could just to put my education together.
But you also pulled that together and all of it is documented.
Yes.
And that is a very important thing for people to do if they do want to become a registered herbalist. All of that has to be really documentable. So I tell people, even if they go on an herb walk, let's say someone at their local health food store is giving an herb walk, and they want to use that as part of that ongoing herbal education, to get either the email or the flyer or something that documents who, what, when, and where, and save that in their computer so they can then list it along with all the other things that they have done to accumulate that in-depth herbal education that's required to get an RH. But I think that's one of the real advantages of the American Herbalist Guild, is that it is doable if you are self-motivated, and it is flexible and also very cost-effective. There are programs you could take for $10,000 that say, you know, they'll give you everything you need to get that RH. And yet you can do that if you need that kind of structure. You just have to be careful because sometimes even those programs won't have everything. And yet the way you did it, I think, is ideal because it really opens up that study to anyone if they are motivated and willing to work hard.
Right. And I did, towards the end of my study before I applied, I did seek out a mentorship with two herbalists, Leslie Williams and Leslie Alexander. And I worked one-on-one with both of them for a couple of years before I applied to just kind of help finish up, work on my clinical skills, and do some roundtable mentorship with them as well. So I do appreciate, too, that the American Herbalist Guild has that mentorship program available for people. It's a great way to team up with an herbalist that has a lot of experience. And there are so many herbalists that offer their mentorship skills on there that you can find somebody that works with your style. I mean, because we have so many different personalities and so many different interests. And, you know, there's TCM practitioners and there's Ayurvedic and there's traditional Western herbalists. So it's great because you can link up with someone who studies similarly to the way that you study so that you're working together.
Yeah, it's flexible, but yet it is in depth. So it's the American Herbalist Guild, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone about it. And also you can contact Christine at herbalrootszine.com for more information about that. Well, Christine, let's look at some of these fantastic things that you have to do that people might want to do today if they go to Herbal Roots Sign in their home with their children. And I love this one because I know in a lot of the country, pretty soon, if not now, the violets will be popping up. You have this lovely activity called Science with Violets. Tell us about that.
So violets are fun because those purple flowers in the spring are just for show. They're not reproductive at all. And we can pick them with abandon, and we're not going to have to worry about decimating the violets. And so we can do so many fun things with those purple violets. The science project is actually making like a litmus test. So if you put an acid in with it, it turns one color. If you put a base in with it, it turns another color. So we can actually use it to kind of have a rudimentary soil sample study to figure out if our soil is acidic or alkaline just by adding the soil into a violet infusion. So it's a lot of fun to see the colors change. It goes from a purple to a bluey green to, you know, to a more pinkish color. So It's a lot of fun just to play around and experiment with it. I also like to do another thing that I don't have on there, but I've done recently, is another passion of mine is using plants as dye. And I'm really interested in the Ayurvedic Ayurvastra which uses dyes on clothing and other textiles to help heal people. And so I was playing around with violet, and you can freeze the flowers of violet. And then while they're frozen, you pour them out on the cloth and you squeeze the cloth, and it imbues the cloth with that beautiful purple dye. So that's another fun project that's easy to do with kids as well.
And I use violets in a similar way, which is put them in ice cube trays.
Yes.
And just freeze them. And then the violets are in there, and we save them for later in the summer when we're out on the deck, you know, nice hot day, and we're doing a mint julep or something to send the mints all up, and just bring out those violet frozen ice cubes just as a decoration.
Yeah, so that's so pretty beautiful. Like that. Yeah.
So it's something that people don't even think of. And, you know, that's why I've been doing this radio show, you know, truthfully, since like 1978. It's when I started doing radio shows about herbs. And I never heard what you just said before, which was really interesting. In fact, of the fact of the violet flower not being the reproductive part of the violet plant.
Yeah. It actually flowers in the fall with the part of it that has the seeds.
Wow.
Sorry. And so they're not very showy at all. You don't see them.
Oh, so it's one of those. So that showy flower that we see in early spring is actually not a flower. It must be some kind of leaf that just goes into another form, because you're saying it doesn't have the ovary and the stamen or all the parts that flowers usually have.
Right.
Wow, that's really interesting. You know, there's no end of learning. That's one of the very exciting things about being in herbal medicine and natural medicine, is that there isn't one day that goes by where you don't learn something new. Well, we're going to take a little break right here once again on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so that you can hear more about PRN, PRN, Progressive Radio Network, .fm. That's where we're broadcasting to you from, and so many wonderful shows here on PRN.fm, and we will be right back with more.
Progressive Radio Network, the station for critical issues from critical minds.
Hey, it's Jesse, PRN station manager. I have an exciting announcement for our amazing listeners. PRN has a new voicemail line that will allow you to connect better with our hosts. If you can't listen live but have a question or comment for one of our hosts, just call 862-800-6805. That's 862-800-6805. This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
Get your daily dose of happy each morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on PRN. LOA Today is expanding to appear on PRN now 5 mornings per week, Monday through Friday. I'm Walt Thiessen, the host of LOA Today. The way you start your day sets the tone for the rest of the day, so start it happy. We explore the realm of positive psychology, the law of attraction, and the power of positive thinking, and we have a heck of a lot of fun in the process. You'll find yourself smiling each morning. That's LOA Today, weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.
Not the right thing, only the real thing. PRN.FM.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can join us by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we're so happy to have over 5,000 followers at Facebook. And thank you so much for joining. All of you listening can just go join there or friend there or like there. I don't know what goes on there too much. And on our website, naturalnurse.com, if you go to calendar, you can see all the upcoming classes and workshops. Most of them are for CE credits for professionals that you can join in with. And today we have as our guest wonderful herbalist Christine Brown, who is a registered herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild. And her website is herbalrootszine.com, and that's roots with an S. And did you say zine, like magazine?
I say herbal root zine, but zine is great because that way people can visualize how to spell it in their head.
Oh, that's true.
Zine is a little less, you know, you could take that either way. So
so you were having that in terms of like a magazine. Right?
Correct. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I should have spelled it as apostrophe zine, you know, so that people would see it's just slang for magazine.
No, you shouldn't, because then they're going to even have more trouble ever finding you because the apostrophe wouldn't be there. So what you have, I think, is excellent. Now, tell us about your book, Herbalism at Home, 125 Recipes for Everyday Health.
So that's a book that I wrote last year, and it was published the beginning of this year. Just a kind of a beginner's book, but with a twist on it. Most beginner's herbals have all the beginner herbs like dandelion and plantain and chickweed, things like that. So I wanted to write a book that still gave us some beginner herbs, but looked at different herbs that weren't necessarily in those beginner books. So I put in herbs, and even some of them are low dose, like poke I put in there, and New England aster. But I wanted to highlight herbs that are not often used but are great herbs and easy to find everywhere, and just teach people how to safely and effectively use them as medicine.
So is this a published book, and is it also an ebook? I see it's on Amazon.
Yeah, it's published through Callisto Media, and it is available on Amazon. It's available on my website, and it's on Amazon. They also do have it as a ebook as well.
So people can get it either way.
Yes.
And does this have color pictures?
It does.
That's amazing.
Yeah, some pictures in there, recipes and different things, plants and stuff.
Well, it looks like the perfect at-home herb book. Now, of course, when you talk about plants, it's a caveat because, for instance, I'm here in Florida, and really the plants are a whole lot different. But when I'm in New York, which I don't know if I'll ever be able to get back there because there are no flights back there at the moment. And also driving's a challenge because all the roadsides are closed. So I'm not so sure when I'll be getting back there. But in Florida, the botany is quite different than in the Midwest.
Yeah, you have a lot more tropical plants than what we can have here. So there are some crossover plants. But I mean, I've only been to Florida when I was a child, so I really don't know all the plants that grow down there. So,
well, the plants you focus on can be found in most places in the country, a lot of places, because it's in the Midwest. I've actually wandered in the Midwest and found wild echinacea stands.
Yeah.
Which is just a fantastic thing to come across in the middle of a beautiful field.
Yeah, it's actually native here. So. It's,
oh, really? Oh, yeah. I know it's been there a long time, but I have seen not only the purple ones. I've never seen those new varieties of white and yellow, you know, other kinds of species, but I have come across the beautiful purple coneflowers just growing wild in the field, which is really amazing. And you also have an ailment section where people can really easily see what plants that they might be able to find, or of course you can always buy them also if you're not up to wildcrafting. Don't you agree that first someone has to be really, really double sure that they're not selecting a plant that has a poisonous look-alike if they want to collect their own?
Definitely. It's very important to know what you're harvesting. And it's also important not to make a plant into something it's not, because, and I'm guilty of this as well, of looking at a plant and wanting it to be a certain plant so much that I overlook little subtle details that tell me otherwise. So that's why I always stress it's very important to pay attention to all those little details on plants and learn to identify them, because some plants are very tricky, and especially in the parsley family, a lot of those plants can be similar, look similar, but can have deadly consequences.
Yeah, a perfect example would be something like the plant that actually killed Socrates. Mm-hmm. And that plant looks very similar in that it has an umbrella white flower to something that is just not at all toxic, such as Queen Anne's lace.
Right.
So I actually know someone who made that mistake, who was actually an advanced herbalist.
Yeah, and that was just last year, too.
Right, we won't say who it is. We both know. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, it is really possible.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when you get to poisonous things like mushrooms, I do know two people who did pick poisonous mushrooms and died.
Yeah, I try not to get into fungi at all unless it's something like reishi, you know, something that's very foolproof and easy to find and not mix up with a toxic. So.
But someone could always start out using your Beautiful Natural Remedies book, and they can even purchase dried herbs from a reputable herbal place and start making some of the recipes, even if they're not up to wildcrafting yet.
Yeah, definitely. And I do have in my book, I have resources of where to find dried herbs, where to find seeds to grow your own if you're into that. So there's a bunch of ways to get around having to go out and wildcraft the plants.
You know who I love? Did you ever try the Richter's catalog? They're out of Canada, but they have so many of the wild medicinal plants.
Yeah, I have used them in the past. They're a great site as well.
Is there another one that you'd like to share with our audience, Christine?
There's a couple that I use. So I use Thyme Garden, that's up in the Pacific Northwest. It's Thyme Garden. There's also Strictly Medicinals that has an amazing assortment of plants. And then also Baker Creek Seeds, which is rareseeds.com. Those are kind of my three go-tos that I purchase from.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'll definitely share that with others as well, because what I tend to do is actually grow some of those in my yard, and I'm not really going to use them as much as I'm going to have them as a teaching garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can teach people how to find them in the wild. So I've had things like St. John's wort that amazingly enough became a very strong perennial and just come back, and they're gorgeous.
It's actually invasive in some parts of this country, but here I don't see that problem at all. I actually have problems keeping it alive. It'll stay around for a few years, and then it dies off, and I have to restart it again.
Yes, I found the same.
Yeah.
Seems that after 3 years, it doesn't necessarily come back. But I love having it, because then when I have people just at my house, I can show it to them. We're not going to collect that one. But then you can be much more sure of finding it in the wild. And that plant in particular, I love the fact that it has a hypericum in its name, and also the fact that you can actually pick it up and look at the perforations, like hypericum perforatum, and you can actually pick it up to the light and see little holes coming through the leaves of light. So perforations. So those kinds of tricks people often will remember when they're in the field, so they're less likely to make a mistake.
Definitely, yeah. And that's a fun thing with the kids, too, is holding that leaf up and showing them how they have all those little pinpricks of light on them.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
What a beautiful thing. So we're going to end our show soon, but this is Christine Brown, R-H-A-H-G. You want to remember Herbal Roots with an S, zine.com, as well as her beautiful book, Herbalism at Home, 125 Recipes for Everyday Health. Christine, just give us some parting words, and I want to say, you should be rocking right now because everybody's home with their kids and everybody's listening. If you are home with your children or know someone who is, which is probably almost everybody listening, go to herbalrootszine.com and try some of the wonderful activities. Christine's also doing a weekly Zoom meeting with parents about how to integrate herbal fun activities into your homeschooling action. And please let us know whatever else you'd like to share as we go off, Christine.
I just wanted to say that I do have over 130 issues focused on individual herbs available that people can just purchase and pick and choose the ones they want to learn about. But if you're unsure of how to get started, I do also offer some year-long courses. I have one on endangered species, and then I have two more beginner herbs, a new to herbs course and a next step. And those two courses especially, I've added a lot of extra materials to where they can, there's a dye project, so you're using the plants to dye with them throughout the year. And then there's, I also teach the parents and kids how to draw plants, each plant as we go along in that course. So definitely check those out. And they're actually on sale right now through the end of April. So it's a great resource just to get your feet wet and teach yourself and your kids about herbs.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, Christine, and happy hunkering down, which really probably isn't much of a change for you at all since you've been doing that homeschooling and really focused on the lands so much.
Right.
Thank you so much for being our guest. And listeners, thank you for listening once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. You can always find them at prn.fm. And you can find Christine, and you can do right now projects with your children or join her on her free podcast through the American Herbalist Guild going on right now during this time, and it's Herbal Roots with an S, Z-I-N-E, herbalrootszine.com. Check out our website at naturalnurse.com. This is Ellen Kamite, the Natural Nurse. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician, we hope that you stay healthy.